this afternoon. As Joanne mentioned, the PRCs have a course or a center, and then we have core research projects. And what I'm going to talk to you about today is the core research project at the University of Kentucky PRC program. And I am the lead presenter today, but I have a whole team behind me, and I'll show you their pictures here in a second. We are funded by the CDC under a cooperative agreement, but our findings and conclusions do not necessarily represent the official position of the CDC. So that's my one disclaimer. My second disclaimer is that I have no relationships to disclose today. All right. So the title of our prevention research center is the UK Rural Cancer Prevention Center. And we're a collaboration of community members, public health professionals from our local health departments, and researchers from our academic entity at UK. And we are all focused on health disparities related to cervical, breast, and colorectal cancer in the Kentucky River District of Eastern Kentucky. And if you all know your geography and your U.S. map, we fall right in line with the Appalachian Mountain chain. And many of our counties in Kentucky are still economically distressed 50, 60 years later after the war on poverty. In fact, we have some of the poorest counties in the United States. And as you know, when you have often low socioeconomic counties and individuals, you also have high health disparity rates. And we, unfortunately for Kentucky, carry a lot of cancer burden. Here again are my team members. The picture on the left, we were actually at a cervical cancer awareness event at the state capitol a couple January. Cervical Cancer Awareness Month is January. These are our two research nurses that are often on a billboard in our rural communities, but they know everyone in the community, and in fact, many times you can argue they're related to everyone in some of our small communities. And then Dr. Stephen Wyatt is is the dean of our College of Public Health and also a part of our Rural Cancer Prevention Center. So let me, as our core project is focused on cervical cancer, and particularly HPV vaccination. And as this figure illustrates, we have quite a burden of HPV-related diagnoses in the United States. And this is, again, just related to genital warts and cervical dysplasia, as well as invasive cervical cancer. But if you think about it, we have a very evidence-based screening tool, Pap testing, for cervical cancer. We now have a vaccine. So why do we still have almost 4,000 women dying from cervical cancer in the United States? It's really a preventable, if I could have a conversation with Dr. Frieden, we might even put cervical cancer on the winnable battles, because it is a cancer that we can do something about. We know the cause, we know there's screening available, and now we have a vaccine available for that. Unfortunately, Kentucky carries a higher rate of cervical cancer. The map on your left is incidence rate, and that's the state broken out by Appalachia versus non-Appalachian counties. And we do have a higher incidence rate in our Appalachian counties. And then mortality, same. We have higher cervical cancer mortality in our eastern part of the state in the mountains. As I just mentioned, we have actually two vaccines available for cervical cancer. We have Gardasil, which protects against cervical cancer as well as genital warts, and we have Cervarex, which is indicated for protection against cervical cancer. For adolescent girls, you can see the vaccination rates. So we're about 50% nationally, but again, Kentucky, a little bit lower rates, only 40% for our adolescent girls. And then for completion of the three doses, again, Kentucky still falls behind nationally. But if you look at it, nationally, we're not doing that well either. Adult women, so the vaccine is approved for women up to age 26. We don't have any numbers for Kentucky, but you can see it's only about 1 in 5 women nationally for the young adult population. And then, again, this whole premise that we have screening available for cervical cancer, we still have about 1 in 4 women in eastern Kentucky in our Appalachian counties that I showed you the map of that have not been screened for cervical cancer in the past 3 years. So prior to this PRC iteration that we're in right now, my colleague, Dr. Richard Crosby, conducted a study where we gave the vaccine away for free. We gave voucher systems away for dose one, dose two, and dose three. The women were recruited to be in a women's health study, but they were they answered a baseline survey and then were given vouchers for the vaccine if they were eligible. And this shows you a comparison between an urban clinic in Lexington, a rural health clinic, and then a rural community college sample. And you can see, really, even when you give the vaccine away for free, uptake particularly, barely reaches 50%, and in the college group, the rural college group, was even lower. But then it just drops off dramatically for doses two and three. So if you think about the vaccine as a public health innovation to prevent a cancer, and if the efficacy that we know for the vaccine is built on the scientific knowledge, you need three doses, we may fail. Even if we can get girls to take dose one, we're not getting them in for the remaining doses two and three. They may think that, life gets in the way, people get busy, I got one dose. One dose is better than none, right? So this pilot study, if you will, that was published in the Journal of Rural Health, really set the stage for our core project, focused on adherence to the vaccine schedule. So we designed, as our, again, core research project, a two-stage HPV vaccine promotion program. Stage one, if you're going to get them to adhere to the dosing schedule, you've got to get them in for dose one. So we did, for uptake, a social marketing and diffusion study to promote dose one, which we gave for free. And then if women agreed, at that point we asked them if they'd like to participate in a research study. And they were random, and if they said yes and did informed consent, they were then randomized to either a DVD-based intervention, an educational video, that promoted adherence to doses two and three, as well as routine pap testing, because that's the other fear. Oh, I'm vaccinated against the virus now. I don't need to have my pap test anymore. But we wanted to promote routine, age-appropriate, guideline-appropriate cervical cancer screening, as well as the adherence to the doses. And then the women who just were assigned to, if you will, the control group, the comparison group, they just got standard of care, which was just reminder phone calls about their dosing schedule. So let me talk about our, as I mentioned, we had kind of two stages. Let me talk about the social marketing campaign quickly. These are billboards. I know people kind of laugh, like, billboards? What? In this day and age? Why aren't you on Facebook? Why aren't you Twittering? All this stuff. Well, we did. We have Facebook, and we have Twitter, and we have other, social media ways to get out to these folks. But in rural communities, billboards still mean a lot. And if you look up on a billboard particularly and you see this, that's a generation of one, it's a family. It's a mom and her two daughters from the community. And then our two research nurses, again, from the community. They were on this one. These billboards are actually around the pap test. But this is one of our colleagues, Tom Collins. Radio is still a big deal in our rural communities. Folks, they tune into the radio to see, they want to hear who died. Really, the obituaries are read over the radio each and every day in other local community. But this is Tom meeting with one of the local radio stations. You can see, I think this was taken last fall when the trees were starting to turn, but there's the radio tower. And it's just a really novel mean, I shouldn't say novel. It's a reliable mean of communication in these rural communities. They only have one television station, and that comes out of one city. We also do barbecues. We go to Walmart, which, if you know also about rural communities, many times Walmart is a key gathering place where folks, when they get their monthly checks, they go once a month. There'll be a traffic jam in town on the first and second days of the month after folks have gotten their checks from the government, and they are at Walmart shopping. So we go. We actually vaccinate in the Walmarts as well. We have some fun T-shirts by Like a Girl, Prevent Cervical Cancer. These are two high school girls that were promoting that. But at the end of the day, the social marketing campaign was about getting particularly young adult women, the 18 to 26-year-old population, in the door for vaccination. So these are two of our girls who actually got vaccinated and signed release forms so I could use their pictures to get them in the door. And then, as I mentioned, we then went on to design, to really focus on adherence, a 12-minute DVD intervention. And we partnered with the UK Department of Communication, and also based on feedback from our community advisory board. Because you all know, if you're going to do work in the community, you need the input of the community. So we have a group of about 10 to 12 community advisory board members. They wanted a visual, audio-based educational message, and they wanted local people also in the video to help with the salience of that health message. So we did focus groups and interviews with young adult women in Eastern Kentucky to get their what they wanted to see in a video, what their beliefs were, what they thought the important messages were. And I won't read these for you now, but this is kind of our opening, if you will, our schema for the actual video. And our logo was 123 PAP, so 123 vaccine, PAP, you know, prevent cervical cancer. But, you know, we heard a lot of the girls, particularly like number three, their mother, their aunt, their grandmother died from cervical cancer or had a cervical cancer experience. And they, you know, this new generation has a vaccine to protect against the disease that wasn't available to their family members. You know, there was some notion about just, you know, HPV is an STD. So is there stigma associated with that? What if your partner wants to know why you're getting that STD vaccine? You know, really that it's your choice as a woman to make to get that and how to talk to your partners about that. And then, of course, we've seen in the literature and other HPV vaccination research, there is always concern about the more or less the novelty of this vaccine and the safety and the efficacy around it. So we address that as well. And then other personal barriers to getting the vaccine, scheduling. You know, people worry, well, I've got to go to the doctor three times. So we really try to make it focus on how easy it can be to get that. You can either just see a nurse, or because we were offering the vaccine in the Walmarts and the health department, we were there every month. You can mark on your calendar the first weekends of every month. We were in three Walmarts, and so our nurses were always there. They were reliable. So our DVD actually featured four young women from Eastern Kentucky. We had two local healthcare providers that were female, a nurse practitioner and a physician, and we also got the local TV reporter, who's again from the community. She's actually down here on the right hand side in the purple shirt. She is seen on TV, and she actually does cancer control research as well, cancer control coalition development. So it was really nice to have familiar faces from the voices of those communities. So let me just show you quickly the study design. As I mentioned, as women got dose one, they got a brochure about the vaccine as well. We had 344 women. And I know we get questioned on this quite a bit, but you all, the women who got dose one, all 344 women, then consented to be in our study. And we get pushback from reviewers when we write this up for manuscripts because people think, well, how in the world did you get 100%? It just is the nature of these communities. It's the nature of having the right staff. I don't know. Maybe they were just being nice. I don't know what happened, but we were able to keep up with all 300, enroll all 344. So they had a laptop computer there when they got dose one, and they were randomized to watch the video and complete a baseline survey or not. They still did the baseline survey, but they didn't get the DVD. And as you can see, fairly even, 178 got the intervention, and 166 just got the regular standard of care. And then what the point was is to really assess, right, adherence rates to the full vaccine series. So quickly, we're still cleaning the data on this and trying to get some pieces together for a manuscript that's actually under review, and we have some revisions to do. But you can see most of our sample has always lived in Eastern Kentucky. Age was about 22 years, mean age. Mostly all white, non-Hispanic, some college. I mean, it's kind of obvious in this age group. A lot of them were in the community college setting. Married, 30% were married. 40% already had children at home. This is striking to me. 46% of our sample reported having an abnormal Pap test result. So we talked about the cervical cancer burden earlier. You know, we didn't have medical records to validate this, but I do hear anecdotally from nurses at the health department they see a lot of genital warts and a lot of early abnormal Pap results. So, and you can still get the vaccine if you've had an abnormal Pap to prevent reinfection. And then about 11% had never had a Pap test. You can see over almost 94% had sexual intercourse, and the mean lifetime partners was close to five. All right, so this is what we're all here for, right? So our intervention was successful. So far, so good. What we're seeing in the data is that those who watched our DVD intervention are returning at greater rates than the women who did not. And we have a percent relative difference of about 36% with a statistically significant p-value. And yet, to be quite honest, even among the standard of care group, to get them to come back at almost 36% is quite impressive. And I think it's, again, just having a good standard of care, good nurse follow-up for just getting a reminder phone call. But, again, we're seeing higher rates, even higher rates among the women who watch the DVD. So the long and the short of it, after controlling for some other variables, we are, randomized to the intervention condition, our odds ratio is 2.4 and significant. So, really, we're excited about this because it's community-based, it's delivered in the field, it was informed by the community, it is focused on both uptake and adherence, and actually what we're starting to really think about is that adherence is a different behavior than uptake. I think we probably all know that intuitively, but there may be different messages and interventions and programs and strategies where you may want to think about differences in actually getting a woman in the door versus and then keeping her coming back for doses 2 and 3. And so, we want to take this video. We can change this video. It was just filmed in a studio in Lexington, Kentucky. But we can modify it. And we've actually done it already for some partners in West Virginia, updated statistics for West Virginia, updated the messages about West Virginia, and their immunization coalition has already disseminated this. We can make it general for Kentucky. We can do it for adolescent girls. This was focused on the older girls. But you could change some of the messaging around adolescents. And then we can also do it for boys and the young adult males as well. So, again, we're excited about our research, and I'm happy to take questions.